All right, so welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking at the marsh fritillary butterfly.
Oh.
And this is going to be based on a study that was published in Biological Conservation.
Ah, interesting.
And the real focus here is the impact of grazing on this butterfly. This butterfly is struggling all across Europe.
Oh, wow.
So this study was done on the island of Gotland, Sweden.
Gotcha.
And it challenges the effectiveness of the EU's subsidized grazing programs. So suggesting that maybe what's intended to actually help the butterfly is actually harming it.
Yeah, that's a common problem with these sort of conservation efforts, right? I mean, it's a real head scratcher because you think grazing is good for biodiversity, especially in grasslands, right?
Yeah.
It prevents those areas from getting all like overgrown with trees and shrubs, which helps a lot of plants and animals thrive.
Exactly, exactly.
But, you know, as this study shows, there can be some like unintended consequences. Particularly for species like the marsh fritillary that really rely on those very specific conditions.
Yeah, so it's not as simple as grazing is good or grazing is bad.
Right.
It's about finding this really difficult balance.
Yeah.
Which it seems like these EU programs are not doing very well.
Okay.
So the study found something pretty alarming, actually.
Yeah.
There were 4.8 times fewer marsh fritillary larvae nests in grazed areas.
Wow.
Compared to ungrazed areas.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So that means you're almost 5 times more likely to find those little baby butterflies thriving where there's no grazing at all.
That's a massive difference.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah. And, you know, that really does highlight the impact that that grazing can have on, like, the delicate balance of the ecosystem.
Exactly.
And it's not just about the number of nests.
Right.
They actually went a step further, these researchers.
Okay.
They calculated what they called a quality quota.
Oh.
So imagine you've got two fields that are the same size. One is, like, super lush and diverse mix of plants.
Okay.
Like totally perfect for the marsh fritillary.
Gotcha.
And then the other one is just heavily grazed, really limited plant diversity, fewer resources.
Okay. Yeah, I'm picturing it.
Exactly. So same size, but very different quality, right?
Right.
That's what the quality quota is measuring.
Okay.
It takes into account not just the physical space, but how suitable that space is for, you know, the species that we're talking about.
Gotcha.
So in this case, what they found was that the effective habitat area in grazed areas was only 21% of that in the ungrazed areas.
Wow. So like,
yeah, so even though the physical space might be the same, the quality for the butterflies is, like, drastically reduced.
Yeah, it's like the grazed area is shrunk by, like, 80%.
Right.
Almost, in terms of how useful they are for the butterflies.
Yeah, exactly.
But why? What is causing this difference?
The marsh fritillary relies on a specific plant called the devil's bit scabious to survive. So this is where the females lay their eggs. It's the primary food source for the caterpillars.
Gotcha.
And what they found was that intense grazing leads to both fewer and smaller devil's bit scabious plants.
Right.
Fewer plants obviously means fewer places to lay eggs.
Yeah.
Smaller plants means less food, right?
Okay.
For the caterpillar.
Exactly, yeah.
Seems straightforward.
Oh,
but
I feel like there's a twist coming.
Yeah, there is. There's a little twist here.
Yeah.
This is where it gets really intriguing.
Okay.
The decline in the host plant is part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't fully explain the, like, massive drop in butterfly larva.
Okay.
It's like a detective novel.
Yeah.
You've got some clues, but the mystery is not totally solved yet.
Okay.
So they the researchers propose a few other possibilities.
Okay.
Like, for instance, maybe the grazing animals are accidentally trampling on the eggs or the larvae.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe the altered habitat structure makes it harder for those larvae to survive during floods.
Okay. So, you know, more research is really needed to figure out these intricate relationships.
Yeah, it's so fascinating to see how, like, even well-intentioned actions can have these unforeseen consequences.
Exactly.
I'm really interested to hear more about the study's findings, especially about the predictions about the future of this butterfly.
Yeah.
And what about those EU subsidies?
Right.
It sounds like they need some serious rethinking.
Yeah.
So let's dive into all of that in part two.
Sounds good.
Welcome back. We're exploring how grazing impacts the marsh fritillary butterfly.
Right.
And it seems like there's more to the story than meets the eye.
Yeah. It's pretty complex.
Those EU subsidies aimed at, you know, promoting biodiversity might actually be having, like, a negative impact on this fragile butterfly.
Yeah. It's a delicate balance.
Yeah. And A key part of this whole puzzle is the decline
Right.
in the March fritillary's host plant.
Like, exactly.
The devil's bit scabious?
Due to this intense grazing.
Yeah.
So before we dive into the study's predictions about the future,
okay.
I'm curious, what makes this butterfly so unique?
Well, the marsh fritillary is really quite a remarkable creature.
Okay.
It has this beautiful checkered pattern on its wings.
Okay.
This like mix of orange and brown that almost looks like stained glass.
Wow.
And its life cycle is also fascinating. Very intimately tied to that devil's bit scabious.
Right, right.
The females are very picky about where they lay their eggs.
Oh, so they're not just dropping them anywhere.
No, they choose only the largest, healthiest plants. Right. They're like looking for the prime real estate in the meadow.
So they're like discerning mothers.
Precisely, yeah. They're very careful.
Okay.
And they deposit their eggs in these clusters on the underside of the leaves.
Okay.
So it creates this little nursery where the caterpillars will hatch and have immediate access to food.
I'm picturing these little tiny caterpillars just munching away on the leaves.
That's exactly what happens next.
Well, those caterpillars are actually really resourceful.
Oh.
They feed together in groups.
Okay.
And as they grow, they create these silken webs around their food source.
So they're protecting themselves.
Yeah, it's almost like a little fortress.
Wow. Okay.
And as autumn approaches, they join forces.
Okay.
And they build this even larger, more conspicuous web.
Okay.
Where they'll spend the winter.
Wow.
In a state of, it's called diapause.
Diapause.
Yeah, it's like a kind of insect hibernation.
Okay.
So, you know, they're just hunkering down in their winter cabin until spring arrives.
Wow, it's amazing how they've adapted to survive the harsh conditions.
Right, yeah.
But back to the issue at hand.
Yeah.
This delicate balance is being disrupted by an intense grazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the study used a population model to kind of predict what might happen.
Yeah.
To the marsh fritillary if things continue the way they are now. What did they find?
Well, the model's predictions are pretty sobering. Oh, no.
If current grazing practices continue, the model suggests about a 22% decline in occupied patches over the next 50 years.
So what exactly does occupied patches mean?
Yeah, so occupied patches essentially means the areas where the butterfly can successfully live and reproduce.
Gotcha.
So those areas are going to shrink significantly.
Okay, so that's a worrying trend, significant loss of suitable habitat.
Definitely.
But the researchers also modeled
what
would happen if grazing were like completely eliminated.
Yeah, they looked at that too.
So that must have painted a much brighter picture, right?
Yeah. The model suggests that eliminating grazing could boost occupancy by a whopping 40%.
That's incredible.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And it really shows just how much of an impact grazing is having.
But I imagine there's a catch.
Yeah.
Eliminating grazing altogether might be great for the marsh fritillary.
Mm-hmm.
But what about all the other species that rely on those grasslands?
Exactly. That's the dilemma.
It sounds like we need to find some kind of middle ground.
Right.
A way to balance the needs of the marsh fritillary with the overall...
The bigger picture.
Yeah. Health of the grassland ecosystem.
Exactly.
So how do we do that?
It's not a simple solution.
Right.
You know, the researchers point out that those EU subsidies, they're incentivizing intense grazing.
Right, which we've seen is...
Which we know can be detrimental to the marsh fritillary.
So the subsidies are supposed to be helping biodiversity.
Right.
But they're actually contributing to the problem.
In a way,
Wow.
They're well-intentioned, but they're not really taken into account the needs of all the species in those grasslands.
Yeah.
It really highlights the need for more flexibility in these conservation measures.
Okay.
You know, moving away from those kind of rigid, one-size-fits-all policies.
So instead of saying all grasslands must be grazed at this intensity, we need to tailor the grazing.
Exactly. More adaptive, site-specific.
Yeah. To the unique characteristics of each location.
Exactly.
Okay, so how do we actually put that into practice?
It's a complex challenge.
Right.
But I don't think it's insurmountable.
Okay.
You know, it requires collaboration, gathering more data, conducting further research, you know, having meaningful dialogues with everyone involved.
Okay.
Farmers, conservationists, policymakers.
Right.
You know, only through that kind of collaborative effort can we really hope to find solutions that benefit both biodiversity and the livelihoods of those who depend on these landscapes.
It sounds like a shift in perspective is needed.
Yeah, I think so.
We need to move beyond thinking of conservation as like separate from human activities.
Right, yeah.
And embrace this more integrated approach that recognizes that interconnectedness.
Absolutely.
It's about
fostering a deeper understanding of the natural world.
Okay.
And valuing biodiversity.
Yeah.
Not just for its own sake.
Right.
But for the essential services that it provides.
Right.
Services that ultimately benefit us all.
Well said. It's clear that we need to rethink our approach to grazing management and find a better way to balance the needs.
Right.
Of all the species
that
call these grasslands home.
For sure.
But what can we as individuals do to make a difference? I'm ready to take action.
All right, let's talk about that in part three.
We've uncovered a lot in this deep dive into the marsh fritillary.
Yeah, it's been a journey.
From their grassland homes
to
those EU grazing subsidies. Mm-hmm. It's clear that protecting this butterfly requires like a really nuanced approach.
For sure.
You don't have to be a scientist
or
a policymaker to make a difference.
Absolutely.
So what can our listener do?
Well, you know,
to get involved.
Everyday people can contribute to conservation efforts.
Okay.
Through something called citizen science.
Citizen science, what's that?
Yeah, so basically armed with just a smartphone and a curious mind.
Okay.
You can become like a nature detective.
Ooh, I like that.
Gather invaluable information
that
helps researchers and conservation organizations.
So what should our listener be on the lookout for?
Well, keep your eyes peeled for the marsh fritillary itself.
Okay.
If you spot one, take note of the date, time, location.
Gotcha.
If you can get a photo without disturbing it, even better.
Okay.
Those sightings really help researchers track the butterfly's distribution.
So we're all contributing to this like giant butterfly map.
Exactly.
Okay. Cool.
And helping them understand how the population's doing over time.
What about the marsh fritillary's host plant?
Right.
That devil's bit scabious.
Yes. Keep an eye out for that too.
Okay.
You know, knowing where it grows.
How abundant it is, whether the plants look healthy or struggling.
Right.
All that information is valuable.
Okay.
It helps scientists understand the bigger picture.
It's about paying attention to the whole ecosystem.
Exactly.
Not just the butterfly itself.
Yeah.
And I imagine there are things we should avoid doing as well, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I'm guessing it's not a good idea to go traipsing through meadows.
No, stick to designated trails when you're out hiking.
Okay.
It helps protect those delicate plants.
Gotcha.
Avoids accidentally crushing any butterfly eggs or larvae.
Right.
And, of course, never collect or disturb wildlife.
Okay.
Leave those beautiful creatures exactly as you find them.
Leave no trace.
Right.
But take lots of photos.
Exactly.
Speaking of Sharon.
Yeah.
It strikes me that just talking about the marsh fritillary with friends and family can make a difference.
Absolutely.
Spread an awareness
about
the challenges, the importance of these grassland habitats. It's a great way to get more people involved.
Knowledge is power.
For sure.
And the more people who understand these issues, the more likely we are to find solutions.
Exactly.
And don't underestimate the power of your voice when it comes to advocating for change.
Absolutely.
Support organizations working to protect grasslands.
Mm.
Write to your elected officials. Sign petitions.
Yep.
Attend community meetings.
All those actions can make a difference.
It's about making our voices heard.
Yeah.
Showing those in power that we care.
Oh, sure.
But there's also things we can do closer to home, right?
Yeah, think of your garden as like a mini nature reserve. Planting native wildflowers.
Okay.
Especially that all-important devil's bit scabious can provide food and shelter for the marsh fritillary and other pollinators.
Awesome. So
we're
all weaving together this network
of
butterfly-friendly havens.
It all comes back to that interconnectedness.
It does. The choices we make, even in our own backyards, can have this ripple effect.
For sure.
On the wider ecosystem.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I hope our listener feels inspired and empowered to make a difference.
That's the goal.
Whether it's becoming a citizen scientist, spreading awareness, advocating for change, creating butterfly havens, our own gardens.
It all matters.
Every action, no matter how small.
Right.
Contributes to protecting
the
biodiversity
that
enriches our lives
for sure
and sustains our planet.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us on this journey.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time for another deep dive.
Sounds good.
Until then, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep diving deep.
All right. See ya.